The shape of the data. Later, when she was calmer, Elena Morales decided not to report the lizard attack. Despite the horror she had seen, she began to worry that she might be criticized for leaving the baby unguarded. So she told the mother that the baby had asphyxiated, and she reported the death on the form she sent to San Jose as SIDS, Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. This was a syndrome of unexplained death among very young children. It was unremarkable, and her report went unchallenged. The university lab in San Jose that analyzed the saliva sample from Tina Bowman's arm made several remarkable discoveries. There was, as expected, a great deal of serotonin, but among the salivary proteins was a real monster, molecular mass of 1,980,000, one of the largest proteins known. Biological activity was still under study, but it seemed to be a neurotoxic poison related to cobra venom, although more primitive in structure. The lab also detected trace quantities of the gamma-aminomethionine hydrolase. Because this enzyme was a marker for genetic engineering and not found in wild animals, technicians assumed it was a lab contaminant and did not report it when they called Dr. Cruz, the referring physician in Punta Arenas. The lizard fragment rested in the freezer at Columbia University, awaiting the return of Dr. Simpson, who was not expected for at least a month. And so things might have remained had not a technician named Alice Levin walked into the Tropical Diseases Laboratory, seen Tina Bowman's picture, and said, "Oh, whose kid drew the dinosaur?" "What?" Richard Stone said, turning slowly toward her. "The dinosaur. Isn't that what it is? My kid draws them all the time." "This is a lizard," Stone said, "from Costa Rica. Some girl down there drew a picture of it." "No," Alice Levin said, shaking her head. "Look at it. It's very clear. Big head, long neck, stands on its hind legs, thick tail. It's a dinosaur." "It can't be. It was only a foot tall." "So? There were little dinosaurs back then," Alice said. "Believe me, I know. I have two boys. I'm an expert. The smallest dinosaurs were under a foot. Teenysaurus or something, I don't know. Those names are impossible. You'll never learn those names if you're over the age of 10. "You don't understand," Richard Stone said. "This is a picture of a contemporary animal. They sent us a fragment of the animal. It's in the freezer now." Stone went and got it and shook it out of the baggie. Alice Levin looked at the frozen piece of leg and tail and shrugged. She didn't touch it. "I don't know," she said, "but that looks like a dinosaur to me." Stone shook his head. "Impossible." "Why?" Alice Levin said. "It could be a leftover or a remnant or whatever they call them." Stone continued to shake his head. Alice was uninformed. She was just a technician who worked in the bacteriology lab down the hall, and she had an active imagination. Stone remembered the time when she thought she was being followed by one of the surgical orderlies.
"You know," Alice Levin said, "if this is a dinosaur, Richard, it could be a big deal."
"It's not a dinosaur."
"Has anybody checked it?"
"No," Stone said.
"Well, take it to the Museum of Natural History or something," Alice Levin said. "You really should."
"I'd be embarrassed."
"You want me to do it for you?" she said.
"No," Richard Stone said. "I don't."
"You're not going to do anything?"
"Nothing at all." He put the baggie back in the freezer and slammed the door. "It's not a dinosaur, it's a lizard. And whatever it is, it can wait until Dr. Simpson gets back from Borneo to identify it. That's final, Alice. This lizard's not going anywhere."
Second iteration. With subsequent drawings of the fractal curve, sudden changes may appear. Ian Malcolm. The shore of the inland sea. Alan Grant crouched down, his nose inches from the ground. The temperature was over 100 degrees. His knees ached, despite the rug layer's pads he wore. His lungs burned from the harsh alkaline dust. Sweat dripped off his forehead onto the ground. But Grant was oblivious to the discomfort. His entire attention was focused on the 6-inch square of earth in front of him. Working patiently with a dental pick and an artist's camel brush, He exposed the tiny L-shaped fragment of jawbone. It was only an inch long, and no thicker than his little finger. The teeth were a row of small points and had the characteristic medial angling. Bits of bone flaked away as he dug. Grant paused for a moment to paint the bone with rubber cement before continuing to expose it. There was no question that this was the jawbone from an infant carnivorous dinosaur. Its owner had died 79 million years ago at the age of about 2 months. With any luck, Grant might find the rest of the skeleton as well. If so, it would be the first complete skeleton of a baby carnivore.
Hey, Alan!
Alan Grant looked up, blinking in the sunlight. He pulled down his sunglasses and wiped his forehead with the back of his arm. He was crouched on an eroded hillside in the Badlands outside Snakewater, Montana. Beneath the great blue bowl of sky, blunted hills, exposed outcroppings of crumbling limestone, stretched for miles in every direction. There was not a tree or a bush, nothing but barren rock, hot sun, and whining wind. Visitors found the Badlands depressingly bleak, but when Grant looked at this landscape, he saw something else entirely. This barren land was what remained of another very different world, which had vanished 80 million years ago. In his mind's eye, Grant saw himself back in the warm, swampy bayou that formed the shoreline of a great inland sea. This inland sea was 1,000 miles wide, extending all the way from the newly upthrust Rocky Mountains to the sharp, craggy peaks of the Appalachians. All of the American West was underwater. At that time, there were thin clouds in the sky overhead, darkened by the smoke of nearby volcanoes. The atmosphere was denser, richer in carbon dioxide. Plants grew rapidly along the shoreline. There were no fish in these waters, but there were clams and snails. Pterosaurs swooped down to scoop algae from the surface. A few carnivorous dinosaurs prowled the swampy shores of the lake, moving among the palm trees. And offshore was a small island, about 2 acres in size. Ringed with dense vegetation, this island formed a protected sanctuary, where herds of herbivorous duck-billed dinosaurs laid their eggs in communal nests and raised their squeaking young. Over the millions of years that followed, the pale green alkaline lake grew shallower and finally vanished. The exposed land buckled and cracked under the heat, and the offshore island with its dinosaur eggs became the eroded hillside in northern Montana which Alan Grant was now excavating.
Hey, Alan!
He stood, a barrel-chested, bearded man of 40. He heard the chugging of the portable generator and the distant clatter of the jackhammer cutting into the dense rock on the next hill. He saw the kids working around the jackhammer, moving away the big pieces of rock after checking them for fossils. At the foot of the hill, he saw the 6 teepees of his camp, the flapping mess tent, and the trailer that served as their field laboratory. And he saw Ellie, waving to him from the shadow of the field laboratory.
Visitor!
She called, and pointed to the east. Grant saw the cloud of dust, and the blue Ford sedan bouncing over the rutted road toward them. He glanced at his watch. Right on time. On the other hill, the kids looked up with interest. They didn't get many visitors in Snakewater, and there had been a lot of speculation about what a lawyer from the Environmental Protection Agency would want to see Alan Grant about. But Grant knew that paleontology, the study of extinct life, had in recent years taken on an unexpected relevance to the modern world. The modern world was changing fast, and urgent questions about the weather, deforestation, global warming, or the ozone layer often seemed answerable, at least in part, with information from the past. Information that paleontologists could provide. He had been called as an expert witness twice in the past few years. Grant started down the hill to meet the car. End of Side 1.